Welcome back into the program. My name is Jacob Bunn. Another fantastic weekend of college football just passed. It was incredible from the opening snap all day long, morning, afternoon, and evening. Of course, ending with that unbelievable Notre Dame and Michigan game Saturday night that we will talk about. We will also talk about the SEC. What happened to that conference? A quietly good day for the conference as it played non-conference teams. And what happened in the two inner SEC matchups between Auburn and Mississippi State and Georgia, South Carolina. So lots to do today on the program. Welcome back in. My name is Jacob Bunn. You can always follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/BunnSports, facebook.com/BunnSports. Email me at sportsbunn@gmail.com. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. And we are finally back after a week of I was out of town last week, so it was difficult for me to get the shows uploaded, but I am back this week to analyze and break down all in college football that happened this past weekend, as well as all that will happen next weekend. We have a full week of guests this week, as always, during college football season. The college football professor will be with us tomorrow. You do not want to miss that. He will give us his thoughts on this past weekend's games, as well as the preview of week three as we enter that. And Robert McElroy, with his perspective, I believe he attended one of the games we will be discussing at length this past weekend. I believe he was there, so we'll talk to him about that one. And, of course, on Friday, we will talk to David Sears, as we always do, about Alabama and other topics, as I'm sure he has a critical eye, as he is now hosting the Game Day Final show on WJOX in Birmingham. So he gets a lot of reaction from listeners and so forth there. We will talk to him about that and what the state of things is between Alabama and Auburn and elsewhere around the conference. And there may be another guest or two this week. There may be another guest or two this week. As always, during football season, we'll have a show every single day, so you don't want to miss that. It should be a packed week. Well, it all started Saturday morning when Auburn and Mississippi State got kicked off. I know there were other games that started before then, but none that really mattered. And it was a back-and-forth shootout. It reminded me of last year's Auburn and Arkansas game, although this game was not nearly to the level that game was last year. But Auburn and Mississippi State squared off in Auburn, and Auburn was able to come out on top by 7 points, 41-34, after stopping Chris Relf from the tying touchdown when he was trying to get into the end zone. Auburn tackled him with a very nice open field tackle, and the ball never crossed the plane. Relf was 20 of 33 for 195 yards, a touchdown and an interception in the game. He had a pretty good game, but a lot of people were questioning that final run and that final play call. Dan Mullen said he gave two options for them to use. One was a run, one was a pass. Now, my question is, if you're Mississippi State, you're going into the end zone, why would you run the football? If you pass the football, I believe before that play they had, and I'm just remembering right here, and I don't believe this is exactly it, but it was somewhere around 8, 9, or 10 seconds to go. If you run the football and you're stopped short, you get no second chance. It's over. The game, the time will run out. There is no opportunity for you to get up there and spike the football or do something else to stop the clock, because Mississippi State had already spent all of its timeouts. So, if you throw the football, you obviously have a chance. Three things can happen. One, it can be caught for a touchdown, obviously. That's the best-case scenario. Two, it can be incomplete. The play is unsuccessful, but it falls to the turf, and you have time remaining on the clock to try another play. Why did they not do that? Now, the third option, by the way, is an interception, which is less likely. I think if Relf didn't find a man open, he would just throw it out of the back of the end zone. The last thing you can do is take a sack or try to run it and not be successful. Well, that is exactly what Mississippi State did, and they came up short. But you have to credit Auburn in this game. I underestimated Auburn, and I am eating my crow today because I underestimated Auburn's ability on offense to move the football. Now, you might say Mississippi State's defense is down and played really, really poorly Saturday, and that might be true. But Auburn's offense really shined. Gus Malzahn put a lot of plays in that were perfect calls at the perfect times, and you just have to give credit to the Auburn Tigers. They are now 2-0 with fantastic games both week one and week two, And I mean fantastic games from a fan, a college football fan standpoint. Not necessarily if you're an Auburn fan, because they're both close. But Auburn, bottom line, is 2-0. And Mississippi State, once again, starts 1-1. I don't believe they have been 2-0. They've won the first two games of their season in north of 10 years. So that tells you how poor things have been over Mississippi State the last several years. And by the way, Mississippi State has still never beaten an SEC West team under Dan Mullen, of course, except Ole Miss. They have not beaten Alabama, Auburn, LSU, or Arkansas under Dan Mullen. So while Dan Mullen has been somewhat of a success, there are a lot of problems that they need to get corrected, and a lot of SEC West teams that they need to start beating if they want to be taken seriously. The afternoon game on Saturday that most people were interested in was Georgia and South Carolina, played in Athens. Could Mark Richt, and this is another one, I got wrong in my predictions. I did not have a good week as far as predictions. Could Mark Richt salvage, well, I don't know about salvage, could he correct, at least for the time being, the mistakes, the colossal mistakes that were made in week one when they were beaten down by Boise State? Or would they drop the game at home against Steve Spurrier's South Carolina squad? And we know now that after an unbelievable, another whack-looking SEC game, because it was so high-scoring, South Carolina with a three-point victory, 45-42 in Athens. Folks, that is a statement. South Carolina, and I don't mean a statement just on the positive side for South Carolina, although it was. South Carolina went into Georgia, trailed most of that ballgame. The fumble forced by Aaron Murray, forced by Jadeveon Clowney, picked up by Melvin Ingram, who defensively did just about everything for South Carolina Saturday. Picked up another fumble and ran it almost for a touchdown. He did pick up this one and took it into the end zone. Was really what turned the game and gave South Carolina the lead and the momentum. Until then, Georgia had controlled most of this game, and you thought that Mark Richt was going to bounce back with a win. But South Carolina, in the waning moments, took this game from Georgia. And there's something that I observed in this game. Georgia's body language, it was passive. It was ambivalent. It was as if they didn't even care. It was as if, I watched this on TV, and I could just see it. I've seen it before. I've seen it with other teams. Alabama, under Mike Shula. I saw it several times with them. This was a look of a team that allowed South Carolina to come back and win this football game. Now, I have to give credit to South Carolina, obviously. They did a great job. Jadeveon Clowney made a play, and by the way, he's the real deal this year for the Gamecocks. But Georgia just, frankly, allowed South Carolina to come back and claim victory in this game. And it all stems from coaching. You allow a team like that, when you have a lead, you're protecting a lead, and mentally just lock up. And that is why a lot of people think Mark Richt should be fired. I don't know about it, even after the season now. It's almost like get him out now from some people nationally. And it's the first time Georgia has started 0-2. Get this. The first time Georgia has started 0-2 in 15 years, which was well before Mark Richt became head football coach there. This is a train wreck in Athens, and I know they'll beat Coastal Carolina next Saturday, and they will get a win. But some have to wonder now if this Georgia team will even be bowl eligible. It's hard for me to see them getting a winning record, which would mean more than six wins. I just don't see that. But will they even get to six wins now is the question. They certainly have opportunities, but this train is going off the track. The next game on our rundown here of interest Saturday was Alabama-Penn State. You wondered how Alabama, young offense, experienced defense, would go into Happy Valley in a Penn State team that, I'm going to be honest, looked improved from last year's team that went into Tuscaloosa. Now, I know it was a hostile environment for a young quarterback like Rob Bolden, and he was thrown all over the place by the Alabama defense, intercepted a couple of times last year. That's all true. But they did not have the experience that they needed last year. They did not look very good last year. This year, this was a different Penn State team, a much more physical, tough Penn State team. But Alabama roll to victory, and that is because Alabama's defense is also more experienced, and Alabama's defense is also better. Talked about Penn State being better, but think about Alabama. And by the way, A.J. McCarron, 19 for 31, 163 yards, and a touchdown, who, by the way, started the game and played just about the entire game. Phillip Sims did come in at the end when it was well in hand to basically kneel on the football. But A.J. McCarron was the starter in this game, and he was the number one quarterback in this game. Now, whether or not Saban will officially say he's the number one quarterback, I don't know. But I'm going to tell you, I saw an A.J. McCarron Saturday that could be a starting quarterback and a very good one at that. I think Saban needs to end it soon and say that McCarron is the starting quarterback. Otherwise, you risk losing a lot of continuity on the team. And I know he wants to keep Phillip Sims involved, but the bottom line is A.J. McCarron looks like a big-time college quarterback. And obviously, Alabama staff relies on him more than Phillip Sims, or he would not have played the entire game against Penn State. I mean, that's just judging by the actions right there. Alabama coaching staff thinks A.J. McCarron is the starter when they need a clutch quarterback, so they went to him. And he was 19-31 with 163 yards and a touchdown. But the most important stat of that game for McCarron was the fact that he did not have an interception. For that matter, Alabama did not have a turnover after the multiple turnovers they had the week before against Kent State. So this time, Alabama, a much more fundamentally sound team, and they get the win 27-11. Pretty much the same story as last year, although Penn State did get a touchdown at the end of that game. But that was the story. That was the story from Happy Valley. Alabama went in there once again and virtually destroyed Penn State. The night game that everybody had interest in was Michigan and Notre Dame, and this was a back-and-forth defensive struggle for most of the game until the fourth quarter rolled around. Defenses started to get tired, and offenses started to make plays, and yes, that includes Denard Robinson, who had 338 yards of just passing, not to mention his rushing yards as well, which he carried the ball 16 times for 108 yards. So altogether, Denard Robinson had 446 yards of total offense. He had three interceptions throwing, though, and I think that's the biggest thing that Michigan fans are going to come away scratching their head about, but you really can't be sad at all if you're a Michigan fan after this ending. In the clutch, under 2 minutes, Notre Dame scores a touchdown and goes ahead, and then Michigan, led by Robinson, comes down the field, scores the winning touchdown in dramatic fashion with very few seconds remaining on the clock. Therefore, Michigan is the 35-31 victor, and hail to them. They did make a great play at the end of the game, Denard Robinson's pass into the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. The first ever night game played at Michigan Stadium was a success for the Wolverines. And how about them starting 2-0, still not ranked in either the AP or the coaches poll, but they start 2-0 with a firm victory of Notre Dame. And you have to give it to Brady Hoke in his first year transition. You're not looking too bad. And how about Brian Kelly? Second year, and he's 0-2. He's lost to South Florida and Michigan now. Things are going to get hot for him. And I know you say, what? Hot? He barely completed a season of football, and things are already hot. Sorry, that's the way it is at big-time programs. And Notre Dame certainly qualifies as one, I think, even though they haven't looked like one in a while. And Brian Kelly's seat is going to get warmer and warmer if he continues to lose, which he could certainly do. Kentucky pulled one out of the fire as we run through the SEC scores, 27-13 over Central Michigan. Nothing like struggling with the Chippewas. Tennessee with a 45-23 victory over Cincinnati. And I think this is the biggest, well, one of the two biggest games for the SEC on Saturday. The SEC had three big non-conference games. Now, they had more. Don't get me wrong. They had more non-conference games. But I'm not talking about the teams that are from non-BCS conferences. They're going to be blown out anyway. I'm talking about big-time games. You had the Bama-Penn State game, which I think everybody thought Alabama had the upper hand in, although it was a road game. Then you had Tennessee, Cincinnati, and Vanderbilt and Connecticut, which we will get to in a few minutes. Tennessee 45-23, a 22-point victory over a Cincinnati team, which a lot of people were saying could upset Tennessee, and the upset alert and all this kind of stuff. And how about Tyler Bray, who was 34 of 41 for 405 yards and 4 touchdowns against Cincinnati, who might have a really bad defense, but Tyler Bray is the real deal this year. And I'm going to tell you this, we'll talk about it later in the week. We're not previewing today, but we will be later in the week. First CBS matchup of the year is Saturday in Gainesville, Florida, 2:30, Tennessee, Florida. That's going to be a very, very interesting matchup. Great win for Tennessee and the SEC, really. Mississippi, 42-24 winners over Southern Illinois. They were able to bounce back after the embarrassing loss via fumbles last week against BYU. They had that game won and gave it away. Arkansas, number 14, with a 52-3 victory over New Mexico. They are continuing to pound their high school opening three games as they play Missouri State, New Mexico, and Troy next week. Wow, big improvement there. They play Troy, and then, of course, before traveling to Tuscaloosa to play the Alabama Crimson Tide, something we will talk at length about next week. But that's who Arkansas gets this week is Troy. Florida with a 39-0 victory over the UAB Blazers, who have become nothing short of a joke of a program after, get this, folks, I have to take just a side tangent here. UAB used its first week of the year. Who did they play? Nobody. UAB had an off week for its first week of the year. Now, how do you have an off week for your first week of the year? What does that do for you? I have no idea. But anyway, they used an off week for their first week of the year, so they promptly go out and get beat 39-0 by the Gators. Really smart decision there to use that off week to prepare for Florida by Neil Callaway. I don't know, maybe he's excited that he kept it within 40. But anyway, Florida wins 39-0, and Florida is the real deal, too. This Tennessee-Florida game is going to be big Saturday in Gainesville. Vanderbilt with a 24-21 victory over UConn, and they are 2-0 now. 2-0. Are the Commodores heading into the game against Ole Miss at home Saturday, one that they will try to win and be 3-0 and 1-0 in conference play. But a great win, for the Vanderbilt Commodores in the SEC as they beat Connecticut. And I'm going to tell you, Larry Smith, the quarterback for Vanderbilt, is the real deal. He was 12 of 24 for 140 yards, a touchdown, and 2 interceptions, but he also had some significant numbers running the football. I think this Vanderbilt team is going to be a threat this year. I picked them to get to a bowl game. Starting 2-0 and a victory over a BCS team like Connecticut is certainly a great start. The final game in the SEC of the weekend was LSU hosting Northwestern State, which they beat 49-3. No problems with them, but LSU needs that victory because that is their only home game in the first 4 weeks of the year. Yes, the first 4 weeks of the year. As you recall, they went to Arlington, Texas on the first week and pounded Oregon. They played Northwestern State, of course, Saturday night, and Mississippi State will be their next destination on Thursday night. Yes, a big-time matchup against Mississippi State in Starkville on Thursday night before traveling north to Morgantown, West Virginia, to play the Mountaineers next Saturday. So this could be a very interesting stretch for LSU. If they go 4-0 in the first four games, watch out. LSU is pretty good if they can do that. That's some significant play. All right, let's continue now and run down the top 25 scoreboard. Friday night, I take that back, Thursday night, Oklahoma State rolled over Arizona 37-14. Arizona State beat Missouri, another Pac-12 versus Big 12 matchup, 37-30. Michigan State was all over Florida Atlantic and beat the Owls 44-0. How about Ohio State? They struggled for three and a half quarters, really, against Toledo. They win that game, though, 27-22 in the final moments. I believe they had a return of a punt or a kickoff for a touchdown that really set up that win. So Ohio State looking very shaky in that one. Wisconsin, no problem with Oregon State, 35-0. Wisconsin is the truth. Let me repeat that. Wisconsin is the truth. They could be serious national championship contender. They are really good. West Virginia, 55-12 over Norfolk State. In that one, TCU with a nice bounce-back win after their loss to Baylor last week, 35-19 over Air Force. Virginia Tech with a touchdown, barely by their fingernails, victory over East Carolina, 17-10. Stanford with a 44-14 whipping of Duke. Oregon put up 69 points. Oh, isn't that great? Well, they're playing Nevada, so I don't know what you can say about that, but number 12, Oregon, 69-20 over Nevada. Florida State, 62-10 over Charleston Southern. Texas with a 17-16 victory over BYU. I thought BYU was going to win this game, but they just never proved that they were better than Texas, and Texas was able to hang on for the one-point victory. South Florida, 37-7 over Ball State. Nebraska, 42-29 over Fresno State. And that concludes the top 25 scoreboard from last weekend. Quickly, the polls that have come out this week, the AP both finds both polls, the AP and the coaches find Oklahoma, Alabama, LSU, Boise State, Florida State, and Stanford in the top six in their respective order. From the SEC, the AP has South Carolina 11, Arkansas 14, Florida 16. Auburn, with their big win, comes in at number 21, and Mississippi State comes in at 25. USA Today, a similar situation. South Carolina, 11. Arkansas, 13. Florida, 17. Auburn, 19. And Mississippi State, 25. Interesting polls as they come out this week. Well, that is a recap of what happened Saturday. College football professor will be with us tomorrow to talk about it, and he will also talk about this upcoming weekend, which has some huge matchups, including Florida State, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Florida, as we mentioned, LSU, Mississippi State, and much, much more. So it will be a very interesting week on the Bunt Sports Show. Hope you will tune back in. Everyone, have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow.